at last, yes? I met your mother on the way to work, yes? She gave me the key. She says something about a pain somewhere, hence not at school, yes?
A rather intolerable pain in the head, brother, sir. I think it should be clear by this after lunch.
Oh, certainly by this evening, yes. The evening's the great time, isn't it, Alex boy?
Cup of the old chai, sir?
No time, yes. Sit.
What do I owe this extreme pleasure, sir? Anything wrong, sir?
Wrong? Why should you think of anything being wrong? Have you been doing something you shouldn't? Yes?
Just a manner of speech, sir.
Yes, but it's just a manner of speech from your post-corrective advisor to you that you watch out, little Alex, because next time it's not going to be the corrective school anymore. Next time it's going to be the bar place and all my work ruined. If you've no respect for your horrible self, you at least might have some for me, who've sweated over you. A big black mark, I tell you, for everyone we don't reclaim. A confession of failure for every one of you who ends up in the stripy hole.
And now, your Chilpack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lernis.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore.
Sitting in for Dean and Phil are Karen Foreman and Lily Holloman.
Karen Foreman and
Lily Holloman
here to host your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour once again, filling in for the world travelers, Dean and Phil. This is Karen. I am a stand-up comedian, improviser, actor, teacher of improv to little kids, also, little-known fact, podiatrist to the stars.
She's great with feet.
I'm really good with feet. And Miss Lily, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I'm Lily Holloman. I'm an actress. I am currently a podcast host right at this very minute.
Me too. What a coincidence.
I know that we should meet here. That's pretty much, and producer.
So many. We wear lots of hats.
Called The Lady Killers.
Oh, yes, The Lady Killers. Yes. Indeed.
So, Karen Foreman.
Yes.
You have been abroad.
I have been abroad to the other side of the country.
Which is abroad.
Which feels like abroad.
It does.
In fact, it takes as many hours to get abroad as it does, just to get across the country.
Sometimes fewer.
Exactly. It's quite a trip. I'm currently writing a book about how to get back from Boston, which is where I recently was.
I'm sure it'll be
a bestseller. I was also in Maine, which I actually grew up there in the summertime. It was so beautiful. And I remember after I was there for a few days thinking to myself, I have not heard one helicopter or siren in 5 days. It was a magical week. Oh, it was. It really was.
And there was some sort of incident with a tortoise.
It was a snapping turtle. Thank you for looking at that picture that I posted. This is so crazy. This snapping turtle was like, what is this, 2 feet, 3 feet? I'm horrible with size. I'm holding up my hands just for the people that can't see.
It's very big.
Giant. Probably 40, 50 pounds. Snapping turtle washed up on our shore. First of all, I've been going there since I was little. We've only ever seen very small little turtles, like the normal ones you would think of in your head. This was a freaking giant snapping turtle that had died. Sadly, we turned it over. Its shell was cracked, probably hit by a boat, which is horrible.
Ooh.
I know, very sad. But I did, alongside that picture, put a picture of a deer. We saw some deer when we were driving home one night. So I thought, life's a balance.
It is, and Yeah, no, it didn't throw me into a deep, dark depression to see that photo.
I'm so glad.
I mean, if this were a dream, Karen Foreman, if only the dream doctor, Dr. Phil Larinus, were here, but he is still on his swim.
Oh my gosh.
Australia. Can you believe it?
This is just taking so long.
Too long.
I mean, I don't mean to be critical, but
I'm starting to think it's a pub stunt.
I do too. Like, he's just going to pubs. He's probably drunk right now.
Absolutely wasted.
Is that what you meant by pub stunt, or did I actually misunderstand that?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Okay, great.
Yes, and, right? That's
right.
Improv. He's just wasted at sea.
That's the spirit.
He's a sailor.
Oh, gosh. Well, I hope he's okay. I hope he's getting all the sustenance he needs and, you know, communing with the ocean critters.
He knows how to do all that.
Yeah, that's true.
He's good.
He seems like that type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Lily, why don't you tell us a little bit about your recent creative endeavors?
Oh my gosh, my recent creative endeavor is so creative, I don't even know if I can talk about it.
Well, I hope that you do, because I'm dying to hear.
I am departing tomorrow for the Nolans, as the locals say. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it only like that.
Of course you are, of course, when in Rome.
So this will be my first trip to the New Orleans.
Exciting. And what will you be doing in New Orleans?
I'll be filming an episode of NCIS New Orleans.
Oh my God, that is so exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I can't wait to hear about it and see it on the small screen.
And my scenes, two scenes, with Mr. Scott Bakula.
Oh my God.
Quantum Leap.
I love that show, and I love Scott Bakula.
Yes. I was at the Breakfast Club, and I was telling my nurse table, my table of retired nurses
yes.
about
the
this
nurses
episode,
at the Breakfast Club.
And I was telling them that I was going to act with Scott Bakula, and they were very they had to inform me that one of the episodes of Quantum Leap, he actually went back and turned into a black man.
Did he really?
He did.
That's inappropriate.
And that
is it not?
Was, I don't know if it is or not.
Okay.
But they were
well,
amazed
I don't know.
By
like...
that. They couldn't believe that he could do that.
Oh, no, that is appropriate. It wasn't like he was wearing, okay, this
no,
is.
No, yeah,
okay.
I think he turned
That's
into
where,
somebody else.
The first place my mind
actor.
Went, I'm like, that is not okay anymore. Okay,
right.
Got it.
Yeah,
right.
I think they got a different outfit.
Oh, gosh, that just almost became...
Uncomfortable?
Uncomfortable.
Oh, please, that's the first
awkward
of many
moment.
Awkward
I know.
Moments
Let's keep them
the
coming,
hour.
People. Let's keep them coming. So that's excited about New Orleans. Anything else you have to report?
Well, I am also headed in the fall to just outside of the Pittsburgh area to film an indie.
Nice.
To be a sociopath.
Oh.
Southern gal.
Wow, that's awesome.
In the indie Home to Roost.
Oh, God, I'm scared already.
I know.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
Congrats.
And it's going to be during the fall and the foliage up outside of Pittsburgh.
Jealous party of one.
Hey, come on down and visit. I'll have a few days off.
I love the fall. I was just having a conversation yesterday with friends about how we miss the fall.
Well, there is that one block of Los Angeles that changes in about
there is.
Late November.
Is it Barrington?
Yes.
Well, no, you were talking about another block. Now I know you're just, stop yes-anding me. No, but Barrington in West LA, that does. There is a part of Barrington, kind of around where Palms and National is, where the trees change. Anyways, go on. Which block were you talking about?
I'm talking about there's a half a block on Edgemont Street.
Okay, you're right here in Los Feliz.
Okay. Sure. Just a few trees. But if you stand
be
and
sure
then
to
you,
go there.
You expand it in your mind, it's quite something.
Oh, you got to use your imagination, people. I'm so in. I'm so in. It's not even funny.
Celebrity deaths.
So Karen Foreman.
That's me.
I don't know if you noticed at the beginning of this show, there was a very unique, eccentric clip that was played.
I did notice that.
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, but it was from Stanley Kubrick's classic A Clockwork Orange.
I am ashamed to say that I didn't see it because I heard it was so terrifying. Or disturbing, I should say.
Well, you should...
But I should see it anyways. Oh, absolutely. It's a classic.
It is very terrifying. And if not for the performance of Malcolm McDowell, but the performance of the great character actor, Aubrey Morris, who played Mr. Deltoid in this film, who was featured in that clip. And the reason we featured him is, sadly, he died.
Oh.
Recently. Sad. Yes. And we want to honor him because it's those kind of clips that make you wish that you were a male character actor.
Oh my gosh, isn't it, though?
A male character actor, doesn't it?
Oh God, for so many reasons.
Just be able to be just completely off your rocker in that way.
Yes, wackadoo.
Only kind of a man can do that particular type of performance, don't you think?
I think that's true.
Yeah.
It was a male role, so that's just one of the many reasons.
Now, the great Aubrey Morris, he was a graduate of the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Fancy.
He died at 89 years of age. And he's particularly close to Phil Lernis's heart because he knew him and wrote a role for him in a script that Dean and he had hoped to make someday.
Oh.
So that is sad.
That is very sad. Does Phil know about the news?
I know he's sailing right now. I'm trying to wire it.
Pigeon, maybe carrier pigeon.
Carrier
or some kind
pigeon.
Of bird, something that can fly, because if he's on the ocean,
Morse
he's not going
to
get the mail. Morse code. There you go.
He didn't learn it before he left.
Well,
that was the biggest
that's gonna
mistake.
That's going to be a problem.
Anyway,
well,
Phil,
I'm really
if you're
sorry
out
to hear
there
that.
And you hear this, just know that we're talking about Aubrey Morris, and he was one of the great Shakespearean actors on stage, and one of the great character actors on screen. I mean, in addition to A Clockwork Orange, he was often recognized for his memorable supporting turns in the horror classic, for instance, The Wicker Man, the Woody Allen comedy Love and Death, the
Love
hit
and Death.
My Girl 2, guest starring roles on such cult classic TV series as The Prisoner, Deadwood, and earlier this year, always up to date, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Wow.
Phil reported before he left, as delightful and unforgettable as he was in all these roles, he says he was even more delightful to talk to.
Oh, wow. So Phil knew him.
He did.
That is exciting.
Well, you know what, Karen?
Yes.
Speaking of dead celebrities.
Well, I guess we're on the topic.
Uh-huh. Did you know that last week Phil and I were interviewed by the number one comedy podcast host Mark Hirschhorn of Succotash?
Oh my gosh, I only know that because it's written here in my notes. This is incredible news. I need to listen. First of all, Succotash. Happy accidents. Succotash is such a great word. Is that a type of vegetable?
It is kind of a mystery vegetable.
Mystery vegetable.
Sometimes I
suffering
Google it.
Suffering succotash.
And I see the picture and I still don't know what it is.
That's so funny.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's so exciting that you guys were interviewed.
Yeah, and he talked to us about, because it's a podcast about podcasting.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
he talked
really
to
cool.
us about the future of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. I'm not sure if that mystery was solved.
Okay.
But he also talked to us about the forthcoming spinoff show starring
Am
you
I
and
right,
me.
Ladies? I love it.
Woo-hoo. So that interview can be heard at succotashshow.com.
That is really, really cool.
In case
cool.
you're interested. But the reason I bring it up is because I'm really wishing to delve deep into your soul, Karen Foreman, because, Mark, it came up, what deceased figure would we most like to interview if we could? And I really, I answered the question on the show. You're going to have to listen if you want to hear my answer.
Oh, gosh, okay.
But
will
here,
do.
Live, right now, this is happening. Karen Foreman's going to tell us who she would want to interview.
I think in the comedy world, the two people that I can think of off the top of my head would be Lucille Ball. Amen. Adorable woman. Mm-hmm. And Gilda Radner. Mm-hmm. And both of them were just so ahead of their times, and they were so, felt like so courageous in their comedy. So I would love to chit-chat with those ladies, maybe someday on the other side. I'll get
or
to do that.
On this side, we invite them back.
Oh, that's true. Seance. Hello.
Heyo.
Look forward to episode one of Am I Right, Ladies?
Yes.
The Seance Show.
The Seance. I am into that.
I am so into it.
And speaking of coincidences, when I went to audition for NCIS New Orleans at the Paramount.
Yes.
Studios. Not only was that where the very first I Love Lucy was filmed. And her dressing room was there.
Oh, my gosh.
So I always kind of like to feel the presence of Lucille Ball whenever I'm there. But I swear to the Lord that the lady operating the gate was the real-life Rosanna Dana. She had the
Are you serious? Oh, my gosh.
She had the same accent. She had the same mannerisms. It was almost some kind of time warp where Gilda Radner had been there and seen her and then brought her back to the 70s.
God. That is hysterical.
It was quite surreal. So I hope, my wish for you is that you go to Paramount and see this woman.
Well, I'm down.
She's amazing.
Sign me up.
It's the closest you'll come to. You can interview her.
That's so true.
Yeah.
That is so true. So, Gilda Radner. Because we all know that's who you are. That's very funny.
So Phil also answered this question, and he, and I don't know how he did, because we kind of figured out a way to ask him while he was on the ocean.
Oh,
on
his life raft. That's incredible. Technology.
Yeah, for some reason we can't get the wire about the dead guy, but
I know.
Can interview
Well, he doesn't want to hear any bad news. I can understand that.
So he said Orson Welles, but then upon further reflection on the great seas, he realized he would want to interview Ida Lupino. Do you know Ida Lupino?
I don't know who that is.
She was a great actress and star in the 1940s and 50s that was kind of the culmination of her career. And what was interesting about her, actually I read this very cool story about how she got her start. Her mother was an actress, and she grew up in London. They went to an audition together, and for her mom to audition, and Ida ended up getting the role that her mom wanted. Yes. That talk about a heavy weight on one's shoulders. So she broke out from there. She went to Los Angeles. She got some great roles, but then she felt that it was tough for her, for a woman, surprise, surprise, in the 40s, to get good roles.
Can't imagine.
So she left Warner Brothers because she called herself the poor man's Betty Davis.
Oh, wow.
She tried out freelance acting and was, through her frustration, became an independent filmmaker. One of
fantastic.
The very first independent filmmakers with her husband. She, in fact, invented the term filmmakers.
Oh, my God.
When she named her independent company The Filmmakers.
Oh, you can't do that anymore.
No.
That's incredible.
And so she was the only woman ever to direct a film noir. And she thereby had this pretty fantastic career as both an actress and a writer-director.
Wow.
In that day and age.
What
pretty,
a woman.
Pretty incredible.
That is incredible.
Yes.
Impressive.
Very much
so. Oh, Ida.
So,
moment of silence.
Hey.
So, I don't know if you've heard of these people, but they are called the Film Fatalis. Fatales.
Oh.
I actually don't know how to pronounce it. That's embarrassing. But it's really cool. It's a collective of female feature directors who meet regularly to mentor each other, collaborate on projects, and support the creation of more films by and about women. It was founded in 2013 by Leah Meyerhoff in New York City. And the group has now grown to 15 chapters in a dozen cities throughout the world, including L.A., Sydney, Sydney, that's Australia, not Texas, because I'm sure there's a Sydney, Texas. There's Paris, Texas. Toronto, London, and Sao Paulo. You can go to Film Fatales, turtlenyc.com to learn more information. They also have a bunch of great short films on there. I was watching some of them this morning. I highly recommend it. And we just need more of this type of thing of, like, women banding together to support each other. They also released two lists. Now, the first list is recent women-directed films that everyone should see.
Ooh.
It's a bit of a long list.
Yeah, you know, I took a look at this list.
You did?
Embarrassing how few I've seen, I have to say.
Yeah, I haven't even heard of most of them. Yeah, it's very embarrassing. But I feel like, I mean, the short film, one of the short films I watched this morning on their site, it was definitely very artsy and not mainstream in a good way. So I wonder if some of these films are also more like indie style. You know, well, obviously they're not big blockbusters or else we would have heard of them. And then the other list is women-directed films that inspired the work of that group of women film fatales.
Now, on the recent women-directed films, were there any films on there that you'd heard of or that you've seen or want to see, etc.?
I'd like to see all of them. Now, I mean, if I'm being honest, I think I would like to see all of them. Obvious Child, I've heard, is really good. I want to see that. Now, Belle, is that movie Belle that was, I think it was nominated? Yes, it is. I'm getting from
an anonymous source.
The producer.
An anonymous source. Who's our producer.
Yeah, so those two. Oh, Your Sister's Sister, also another one. It's on Netflix, I know, and I've not seen it yet, but I've heard great things.
There's the top movie on this list is called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night by Anna Lily Amirpour.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually stars a dear friend of mine named Sheila Vand.
Okay.
And I was in this crazy, cool production set in a meatpacking plant in 2007 where I played a homeless, pregnant gal named Jewel. Mm-hmm. And she was the assistant director. She was still at UCLA, Sheila Vand. And she's created quite a fascinating career for herself, and she stars in this movie.
That's fantastic.
I think it's about a vampire, and I can't wait to see it. It's all in black and white, and she's wandering the streets, and she's very, very old, thousands of years old.
Oh, cool.
It's gotten great acclaim. I did see Selma. Did you see Selma?
No, I didn't.
By Ava DuVernay.
Selma, of course I've seen that one. I mean, heard of it.
And that was fantastic.
Just great.
Crying nonstop during movie. And of course, also Pariah, I did hear of by Dee Reese.
Okay.
About a Brooklyn teenager coming to terms with her sexuality. It looks fantastic and got great acclaim. I think it made a lot of top 10 lists from 2014.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, this is exciting.
So, yeah, and then what about the women-directed films that inspired the work of this group?
Well, certainly, I mean, American Psycho, Boys Don't Cry.
Boys Don't Cry, intense.
Oh, gosh, so
intense. That came out when I was a teenager, and that kind of changed the way I saw films. That might have been one of the first independent films I ever saw.
Yeah, I think I was two when it came out.
And I think,
it made a big impression on me.
You were like
in the womb.
I was in the womb.
Gas, Food, and Lodging. I remember that film with Ione Skye. That was a good one.
Some of the more recent... Okay, so this isn't that recent, but Me and You and Everyone We Know by Miranda July. Do you know that one?
Yes, I do.
One of my favorite movies.
Yes.
Miranda July is such an institution in my mind. She's someone to kind of aspire to be. She's creative in every sense. She's an artist first and foremost.
Wow.
And then under the tent of artist, she creates her work however she feels moved.
I love that.
And so she made this film
inspiring.
To great acclaim at Sundance at the turn of the century, shall we say.
Wow.
And then she had all these meetings with these bigwig people, and it felt like she just kind of said, you know what, I'm not going to direct your next blockbuster. Mm-hmm. I want to really be inspired about what my next piece is going to be.
Wow, that is someone who's committed to their art.
Absolutely.
A true artist. That's inspiring, for sure.
One of my favorite books is called It Chooses You, that she wrote while she was suffering a writer's block for her next feature called The Future. So she turned a writer's block into a whole new creation. And what happened was, you know, we have these moments where we're just kind of procrastinating and doing weird things to avoid our work.
A million times, yes.
Well, what she did was she started reading the Penny Savers, the Penny Saver ads as her procrastination. But that then inspired this entire book where she started showing up at these people's homes around Los Angeles who were selling these bizarre, bizarre things. There was a man with a collection of Care Bears. And so she just went in, she took pictures, and she interviewed about what his relationship was with the Care Bears and why. And it's one of the most fascinating novels I've ever written. And then at the end of the novel, she meets somebody that then unblocks her for this feature, The Future, who then is a part of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And the film culminates in going to this man's house.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool.
So I would both recommend The Future and It Chooses You, the novel.
Yes, absolutely. It's so cool to hear about, like, if you're really open, that those things will come to you. If you're truly open to anything.
Exactly.
Not just what you think you're supposed to do, or
preference,
whatever.
An idea of perfection, or being liked, all these things that get in our way.
Yes.
Amen to that, Karen Foreman.
Good talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, there's other ones I recognize in here. Well, Monster, that was the one with Claire, what's her name? Charlize Theron. Thank you, little bird.
That was the big announcement saying, you don't have to be pretty. Pretty people can be ugly and win Oscars.
Right. And by the way, I don't know if you ever saw the actual woman, Aileen.
Mm-hmm.
There was like a documentary, I think, that was made about her. I watched it and it was so tragic. This is really off the subject, but it was so tragic. Like, this woman who just grew up in a very, you know, of course had a horrible childhood, and then just was so systematically, like, ignored, abused, etc. And you almost see, like, how it makes sense that she became the way she became, you know? I know, I found it so fascinating.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad they made a movie about her.
Mm-hmm.
Boy.
Yes. And so anyway, if you guys are interested in these full lists, it is available on IndieWire.com. And again, that's the Femme Fatales group, a collective of women. If you're a female filmmaker,
then you ought to check it out.
Check it out. And, you know, on the subject of female filmmakers, since we're talking about this.
Which we usually do.
It's so off topic.
Hello.
Please. There was an article on Vulture.com, an entertainment website, by film producer Mynette Louie, about the four ways women get a raw deal in Hollywood.
Oh, womp womp.
I mean, you know, cue the siren.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was so appropriate that time. I don't know if you guys heard it, but there was a siren in the background. Like, or this is an emergency. Let's fix it.
It's really an upbeat article in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if we can put, like, a fun spin on this, but I'm going to try.
I like it. Let's do it.
Let's start it with, like, some carnival music.
Okay.
Number one, the babysitting barrier. Woo-hoo!
Everybody wants one.
So this is the concept that female directors and producers are far more likely to be supervised during decision-making meetings than their male counterparts. That's a little annoying. I can understand.
Super annoying.
Now, I had an interesting experience on my past film that I did called The Love Witch, which we talked about a few weeks ago.
I do recall.
Female film director.
Got it.
And she was so aware of the babysitting barrier that she made every point to make sure that there was nobody who would possibly supervise her of the male persuasion, or anybody, on set. She wanted complete control Fantastic. Of the whole situation. And while I had a great time in the film, I loved it. It was fascinating to witness, because personally for me, I don't really mind kind of these obstacles. I feel like part of the creative process, if you have a wall to push against, it causes growth.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, it's like the chicken and the egg, or the potted plant phenomenon. You sort of, artists need that thing to push
mm-hmm.
against.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating to watch not having that, because there were these long, every single day went about 18 hours for people.
Dear Lord.
It was quite kind of the black hole phenomenon of not having this this thing to push against. And so while I appreciate female directors wanting to have their independence, and male for that
mm-hmm,
matter,
mm-hmm.
there is something to be said for that structure of resistance that helps us.
Absolutely.
And to be aware of that.
I totally agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yes, that is a problem, and women should not, men should not feel that they need to babysit women,
right.
and at the
and
same time.
And we all need our structure and our people reality checking us.
Yes, we
always.
Do.
Yeah.
So whether or not that is a sexist thing or just a common need
mm-hmm.
is open for debate.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Number two, she cites the mini-me problem.
Yeah.
And I have often felt that Vern Troyer is at the root
of all these
of the feminist block in filmmaking.
I'm with you on that one. I'm totally with you. I just have this image of him on his little roller cart that he rode around on that reality TV
yeah,
show
just
on.
Holier than
drunker
thou.
Than drunker than drunk.
Just
I mean.
Insulting
just,
women.
Oh, absolutely.
Left and right. I mean, that's what Minette Louie meant, right?
That is exactly what she meant.
Oh,
no, that's actually not what
no.
she meant. But it was still a good thing to bring up.
I think so.
I mean, you know, and it is true. Like, she's talking about how women don't have as many mentors that are have been around for a long time, because most of the directors that are working are men. So,
we're
you know,
already
obviously
in
that
a patriarchal system.
Absolutely.
And so when the men in higher power seek, if they're not available, or the job's not going to pay them
mm-hmm.
enough, they will knee-jerk refer a filmmaker that reminds them of themselves.
Yeah, sure.
And that's understandable.
Right.
You know, it happened in the instance of Jurassic World.
Mm.
That is how Colin Trevorrow got to direct this big budget. Colin Trevorrow directed one micro-budget indie, which
wow.
had much acclaim. It was Safety Not Guaranteed.
Oh, yeah,
saw
I did.
One.
It was so cute.
And so the legend has it that the studios wanted Brad Bird.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Bird was busy directing Tomorrowland.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, hey, this guy reminds me of myself. I don't know if that was really his inner monologue, but this is the story we're constructing.
Okay.
So his mini-me directed, he referred his mini-me, Colin Trevorrow, which also sounds like tomorrow.
It sure
so
does.
So it was probably word
yeah,
association
very
as well.
Subliminal,
mm-hmm.
this whole thing.
And he directed Jurassic World. Now, women never get opportunities this way.
No, not usually.
Probably not. Just
no.
because of the system that's already set up. So
right.
we're not insulting this. We're just saying, hey,
this is a
let's
fact.
Wake people up.
Let's do it.
And shake it up a little. Not that a woman would probably want to direct Jurassic World,
yeah.
quite honestly.
I did not see that movie. I didn't hear great things about it.
Oh, I actually, side note, loved it.
Oh, okay. Well, then I heard great things about it.
I but it okay, was good. A hoot.
Okay, great. Well, then I'll see it.
There's a lot of great comedic moments.
I love that guy.
It's a little rocky in the beginning with the acting. But once they get into full-on action, it's a lot of fun. I mean, come on. Dinos.
Yeah,
comedy. Meets cool air conditioning during the summer.
Oh, God, yes.
That's a killer combination.
Oh, my gosh.
So
it sure is. Oh, it's great the drought's over, right? It's rained the last couple of days.
Absolutely.
So we're done. We're out.
We're out of that. Just a couple of inches.
No more
is all
drought
we needed,
guilt
right?
for me. Yeah, that was it. Go
Problem
California.
Solved. So we're halfway through this list, and we're really delving now.
We really
Karen,
are delving.
Because we're into the unconscious. We already sort of dipped our toe into unconscious realities about the situation. Mm-hmm. Now we're full on.
I hope people can follow.
Because
this is deep.
It is. Because number three she cites is the knee-jerk disrespect.
Mm.
Now this is all instinct here. Such a small proportion of directors, producers, and executives are women that people in the industry, they unconsciously have low expectations when they meet us.
Right, and they don't necessarily assume we're in charge or...
or have the power to hire or fire them.
That's right.
Yeah, so the default attitude is disrespect.
Yeah.
Even when they know a woman is in charge, the disrespect is hard to dismantle.
Mm-hmm.
So...
get to work.
Don't to work, disrespect.
People. Don't do it. Just don't act before you think. I think that's another lesson.
Yeah, that's
like,
what I'm saying. You know. And when that doctor puts that hammer under your knee, go away from the lady. Don't kick the lady.
Don't kick the lady.
That's what I'm saying.
As a podiatrist to the stars.
Yes, what's
your
input?
I couldn't agree with you more. Mm-hmm. I've been kicked so many times.
I know. That's what she was referring to.
Yeah, that knee-jerk.
Your own special report about that.
That's right.
Now, ladies, there's a power in underestimation, however, which I have learned to kind of harness because I'm small, I look fairly innocent, and so there is a way to sort of manipulate this underestimation. And what you do, basically, is you allow for it to happen, and then, boom, you hit them with the power.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So just practice that
I'm
in the mirror.
I'm on board.
Practice it in the mirror.
I'm so on board with that, because I'm also, we're about the same height. How tall are you?
5'2¾".
You're taller than me. I like to say I'm almost 5'2", because I really hope to get there someday.
Yeah, you
and
will.
And I have faith that I will.
I have faith that
because
I'm still growing.
Because I believe in magic.
Yeah.
And also, I do yoga, so... Mm-hmm. So yeah, us women, we need to band together. That's kind of her last point. I have a two-prong, attack for this. It's called the bliss slap.
Oh, wait a minute. But I'm not sure we completely explained the fourth point.
Okay.
And then I want to discuss the bliss splat.
Bliss slap. That
like,
one is
really
that's a
ASAP. But yeah, number four is another unconscious thing, which is the spotty solidarity, which is unconsciously for women that when they have made it, it's because they've figured out how to join the boys club and they then in turn have a lack of support for their fellow female directors. And that, you know, it's an iffy thing to bring up because even bringing it up makes you feel like you're kind of not supporting other female directors.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something to delve and be aware of and say, look, maybe this is another knee jerk that women kind of, this is what women have turned to, which is this, I'm lost for words.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really, I can kind of understand it in a way, because if you get into that position of power, it's so hard to get there as a woman.
Yes.
And then when you get there, it's like, it becomes very precious.
It
and
does.
Maybe you don't want to take the risk of, like, you know, rattling any feathers or
and
whatever.
And because there's so few opportunities, you then say, well, if there's only one slot for women, it's going to be me.
That's right.
So I'm going to kick you down the hill.
It's really tough. It's just another way that women are oppressed by, like, that system.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
just something to bring your awareness to.
That's right. It's a darn good article.
And to turn around with a bliss slap.
You guys, we gotta use the bliss slap. It's a two-pronged approach.
Okay.
Ignorance is bliss. So, yes, all these things are true. It's hard for women, but just don't think about it and move forward with your projects and with what you love and with your, you know, attack kind of attitude towards the business. Because all that information is true, but there's also so many exceptions to the rule. So why not have that be you? And then also follow your bliss. Because I feel like when you follow your bliss, that's when good things happen. So that's my two cents on all of those things.
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay, I'm just going to bring it down a notch. So, I don't know if you guys all heard that there are these court documents that were just unsealed from 2005, and Bill Cosby freaking admits that he drugged women in order to rape them. Now, why was it so hard for people to believe more than 35 women making these allegations than they did, you know, Bill Cosby saying he didn't do it? Now that we know, it absolutely happened.
I know.
Because false allegations of rape are extremely rare. And it's one of the most underreported crimes, of course, because there's so much shame involved. And then, you know, of course, when you don't believe someone who has a traumatic experience, that only exacerbates the trauma and makes healing that much harder because you're not getting validated in any way and you're just totally alone and you're in that event. Oh, gosh.
It's sort of, it's a tragic turn of events. It's also fascinating in the name of psychology in terms of how people react to this news. That, you know, Phil actually came across, he was confronted by so many, because Phil is a violence prevention specialist. I don't know if you know that.
I thought you said violence professional. You started to say that. I'm like, wow, word on the street. we need to talk, Lily. No, I did not know that, and that's fantastic.
So he was very outspoken about these women from the start because he knew that if this amount of women were coming forward about Bill Cosby, and not only that, women who had nothing to gain, women who were already famous and already well-to-do, so they weren't in any way trying to extort or trying to get spotlight. They had the courage to band together because this happened, and it was horrible. The amount of angry, emotional, passionate denials from men about Cosby's guilt was kind of astounding.
Yeah. That is really,
and
that's horrible.
I don't
think I knew that there was so much.
And it's kind of this Gone Girl phenomenon, which I have named, because Gone Girl was, I didn't love that movie because of what we're talking about, which is rape is the most underreported crime in our nation, and the Gone Girl, the film, I don't know if you saw it, it played on men's fear that they're going to be wrongly accused of this crime.
Yeah,
and
that's the last thing we need.
Exactly, and I think this news story played on that fear as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but of course, people's collective attachment to Bill Cosby being Cliff Huxtable.
I know. I think that was a lot of it, honestly. Like, he was just this quintessential, amazing father figure in the eyes of everybody.
Yes.
Because it was such a popular show. I really feel like that was a lot of the reason why it was so shocking and hard to believe and hard for people to, like, soak it in and accept that this person is not who we thought he was. Like, he's actually was the complete opposite of what we thought. I had a friend who worked on The Cosby Show, and he said he remembered one time they were all, like, in the green room before they were to go out and start filming, and some young girl was sitting on Bill Cosby's lap. And, well, she was maybe 19 or something, or, you know, around that age. And nobody in the room batted an eye. Like, it was just normal every day. And he thought it was weird. It was just, like, an odd thing to see. Because why is this, like, 20-year-old girl sitting in Bill Cosby's lap? Really weird. Yeah. And he was so distracted, he actually missed his call to go on stage, Bill Cosby. So, anyways.
It's
I think people just turned away from it and didn't.
It's rife for unconscious discussion. I mean, it's almost as if, in a way, Bill Cosby built this whole image, mm-hmm. being the nation's dad and creating this sitcom so that he could get away with this crime.
Well, it gave him so much power. It gave him so much more power in that regard.
Yes.
Because he was seen that way.
And it gave people a reason to deny it, because mm-hmm. there was such a need for this. The Cosby Show was an innovative show.
Oh, God, it was so good.
And everybody watched it.
Yeah.
And even nowadays, shows starring predominantly black cast, you know, in the mm-hmm. 90s, it got kind of partitioned off into their own channel, and people mm-hmm. started watching different things. But this show bridged.
It sure did.
Bridged a racial gap, and it so it's heartbreaking on so many levels.
Oh my gosh.
In that way.
I'm glad that those documents were released, though, because I feel like that was important for people to know. Like, he admitted it. It absolutely happened. These aren't just, like, made-up things, if you had any doubt. I feel like the second I thought I saw Beverly Johnson talk about it, I was like, oh, yeah, it happened. Because she's so credible. Like, Janice Dickinson is so kooky and crazy. Like, it's not that I don't believe her, but she's not, like, a great she's not the person you'd want up on the stand in court to, like, testify. She's so crazy.
Right.
But, yeah, people like Beverly Johnson, and I know there were other women that were, you know, more credible. And you know what? That just reminds me of, there's a great documentary on Showtime I highly recommend. I just watched it the other day. It's called Dreamcatcher, and it's about this woman who started this nonprofit called the Dreamcatchers, and it's based somewhere on the East Coast. I don't remember exactly where, but she is a former prostitute, and she goes out and she drives around literally the streets of the city that she's in, hands out condoms, talks to women, and tries to help them and get them to become a dream catcher girl. She also works at after school programs with teenage girls, and it was such an inspiring, she's such an inspiring woman. She goes into jails. She's so helpful to, like, these women that are so lost. Anyways, I highly recommend this documentary. It's so, so good.
And so what turned her around? What made her want to?
Well, I think that, you know, she had two kids when she was a teenager. And, you know, she missed most of their childhoods. Like, she was gone for, like, 12 years. And because she was out working. And she was very, like, close to her pimp. And she actually became a perpetrator. She's like, that is the only way you survive on the streets. She would go get young women and bring them back to her pimp. And she had so much shame about her lifestyle and what she was doing and all of that, that she felt like she wasn't good for her kids, so she should stay away. And she was an addict. Finally, she got into recovery. She turned her whole life around. And she just has this spirit that you can tell was always there and just wasn't, like, nurtured. But she finally got to a place where rock bottom, I guess, where she was able to turn it all around and then create this amazing foundation and help so many people and, you know, to get into recovery and all that stuff. It's a really beautiful documentary.
That reminds me of a documentary that I just adore, that I rarely remember things that I see, but this is vivid in my mind. It's called The Interrupters.
And I've seen it.
And that's another so fantastic That Which Wounds Us Heals Us documentary.
Incredible.
About these people in the worst part of Chicago who served time in prison for violence, for gang violence, who then, when they got out, they decided the only way to make a difference is if I can go back in the street and stop people from creating this future for themselves.
Interrupt that path and, like, stop it, get in there, get them help, get them support. Yeah.
And because they have this path, this past, they are credible.
That's exactly the same way with this woman. She's like, I was you.
Exactly.
I know exactly what you're going through. So there is that credibility.
And so in a lot of ways, if you've been through something terrible, the best thing you can do is turn around and talk to people on the same path, because in a way, the people on that path will only listen to you.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
People can try to help, but if you've been through it, you have a greater likelihood of helping and making a difference.
Absolutely. Are we nearing the end of our time together? This has been fantastic. You know, I want to do a little bit of shameless self-promotion before we end.
Please
I have
do.
Two shows coming up at the Comedy Store. One is this Thursday, August 25th at 8 o'clock in the Belly Room. July 25th.
Or August. You said August.
Did I? I'm so sorry. Thank you, little bird. The one is July 25th. July 23rd. God, I'm horrible with dates. July 23rd, which is this coming Thursday night in the Belly Room at the Comedy Store. And then another one at the Comedy Store on Wednesday, August 5th in the Belly Room.
Now, is there any kind of joke that you want to try out on me that you're working on? Or?
You know, I'm still working on my set for Thursday because I started doing all new material. So, yeah, so I'm still fine-tuning a couple of things. So I think you'll just have to come out and see it.
All right,
To enjoy it. I also have a little web series up on Funny or Die called Pitch Imperfect, which I might have mentioned last time. My friend, my, quote, writing partner and I pitch horrible ideas to an executive. It's a little improvised four-episode web series. And my other web series I do with the lovely Nicole Dalton, I'm Triggered. We are currently looking for female directors that we admire and love right now to direct upcoming episodes.
So casting call.
Casting call for female directors.
Yeah.
And I'm also thrilled to announce that I will be dancing in the Sweat Spot recital at the end of August. The Sweat Spot is this dance studio that I absolutely love, that I go to a lot, and I was asked to be in one of the pieces. So I'm very excited. We started rehearsal last night.
What's the song?
It's Because the Night by 10,000 Maniacs.
Oh, can you sing it a little?
Because the night belongs to lovers. Because the night belongs to us.
Because the night belongs to lovers.
Because the night belongs to us. That brings us to the end of this installment of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. All 427 episodes are available for listening pleasure, your listening pleasure, in fact, on Blog Talk Radio and at chillpackhollywood.com. Continue to enjoy every new episode on iTunes, Stitcher, and through our friends at fanboynation.com.
You can like your Chill Pack Hollywood at facebook.com/chillpackhollywood. You can write the show at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at Dean and Phil. They're really picking up their game. They're tweeting about entertainment news and whatnot.
Ooh. So, and you can also follow us on Twitter. Isn't that right, Lily? I am at the Karen Foreman.
I'm at Lily Holloman. Dean and Phil will be back next week, so never fear. They're not even going to talk about a single vagina.
Oh, my God.
On the whole thing.
That's too bad for them.
I apologize for saying
that's
that
word.
Get cut. Now I'm embarrassed,
that's
Phil.
Okay. No.
But I will say that Karen and I will be returning soon with our own podcast.
Woo-hoo!
We won't mention that word ever again.
No.
Or maybe we will.
By God.
Yeah, I think maybe we'll address the discomfort.
Let's do
of
that.
Saying it.
You guys, I'm excited about our podcast. It will be called "Am I Right, Ladies?" which also happens to be my catchphrase as a stand-up. So,
enjoy.
Stay tuned for
we
that.
Love you.
Thanks for listening.
Am I right, ladies?
What'll it be?
I was going to fill up with whatever's cheapest.
I'll be happy to take care of that for you.
I thought this was self-serve.
We're completely full service here at Empire State Gas. Sure, it may cost you a bit more, but you're worth it. Now, what else can I get you? Something from the snack shop for you and the little lady?
There is no little lady. I'm alone. And I just ate.
Well, how about a complimentary balloon animal for the kids?
I have no kids, and I'm still alone.
Well, don't feel bad. You may be alone, but you're wise enough to come to the largest independently owned gas station chain in the Northeast United States.
We're in Los Angeles.
I'm sure that you know that our gas is organically grown and good for the environment.
Good for the environment?
That's right. When you burn our fuel, you're actually helping to reverse climate change. That's why we say at Empire State Gas, from farm to pump, we've got great gas.